I want to read tonight from Psalm 23. Psalm number 23. Of course, you'll remember better now that we made a mistake. It is Victoria Drive, right? Now you'll remember. Psalm 23, verse 1. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You'll be wondering why I'm reading this in a gospel meeting. But our brother Hull has said that he's going to tell us how he got saved, where and when. And some have asked me to give a little bit of a rundown on what happened 20 years ago with a plane incident. I call it an incident. It's not an accident. There's no accidents with law. But in order to do that, I wanted to bring to your attention something here in this psalm. Even if it's only one part of a verse. And that is, thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. I want to say right at the very beginning of what I have to say that God is going to deal with every individual. As far as unsaved ones are concerned, he's going to deal with them at the great white throne. He's not dealing with them now. No matter what people say about certain things that come upon them, that's not God's dealings with them. God's dealings are in the future for the unsaved person, that is, at the great white throne. As far as the Christian's concerned, he's dealing with them now. That is, by day, he looks after his people, he feeds them, he keeps them, and he chastises them. And so, what I'm about to say for a few minutes tonight simply is this, that those who have been saved by the grace of God, God has a way marked out for them from the time they get saved until they get home to heaven. I call it the turnpike. However, sometimes a Christian will get on the road on the side of the turnpike. It's only a narrow road, it's only a dirt road, it's only a service road. But even there, God is able to use that person in a certain way. What I'm saying simply is this. There was a leading up to 20 years ago. There was a leading up to that which people call an accident, I call an incident, because God was in it. So what I'm saying simply is that in the psalm that we have read, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Now we have read it the way a Christian reads it. But if we were to read it the way an unsaved person would read it, or should read it, it's just the opposite. It reminds me of the car that was still running down in the States, the southern states. The fumes were still being directed into the car when they opened the door. The dead heroine lying there with a note beside her. She had reworded the 23rd Psalm to read like something like this. The Lord is not my shepherd. I shall walk. He does not make me to lie down in green pastures. He does not lead me beside the still water. He does not restore my soul. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear evil. For thou art not with me. Thy rod and thy staff do not comfort me. The only comfort I've had is the heroin, the needle. And even then, it wasn't a comfort. It has wrecked my life completely and brought me to disaster. And then she went on to say, thou preparest a table, thou dost not prepare a table in the presence of mine enemies. My cup does not run over. Surely goodness and mercy will not follow me all the days of my life. And I will not dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I have to say again, that's the only way a person can read that psalm who has never been born into the family of God. However, it is delightful, isn't it, to those who have been saved by the grace of God. It's a psalm that could be read anywhere, whether it be a hospital, whether it be an accident scene, or whatever the case may be. As far as the Christian's concerned, it's been a comfort over the years. For me to speak about 20 years ago, I have to go back a little bit to show you why it happened. I know why it happened. I said before, I say again, when a person gets saved by the grace of God, and maybe this will be a help to some that are newly saved, as far as the person is saved is concerned, God has a way mapped out from them, from the new birth until they get home to heaven. And many has stayed on that course, and they've fought a good fight, as the Apostle Paul could say. They've kept the faith, and now they've entered into their labors for eternity. I started out when I was 15 helping my father in meetings, Mr. John McCracken and Mr. Brennan. Many series of meetings were held and souls were saved. I was with Mr. Ramsey over in Prince Edward Island from 1955 for 10 years, worked with him. When we arrived there, there was about 70 Christians in assembly fellowship, three assemblies. And inside the 10 years, there was two more assemblies, and now there's about 200 Christians. God was working. Souls were saved. But I want to say, as I go by here, the devil doesn't like that. And so, rumors were started, accusations were made, and of course, being not the kind of person I ought to be, with a stiff backbone, I threw in the sponge, so to say, went back to work. I liked my job. I liked the work, flying aircraft, but I wasn't happy. For a person on that side road, as I'm talking about, a Christian that's got off the turnpike onto the side road is not happy. He can't be. He's not in the mind and will of God. And yet, even then, with many meetings, souls have been saved, the Lord allowed us to meet people even in the work that got saved. So even then, it's not like altogether a loss, but it's not what God wanted. You see what I'm coming to? There was different things that happened in my life to make me realize this is not the way God would have you to be. You started out, and I'm convinced of God. I was convinced at 15 that God had a work for me to preach the gospel of the grace of God and souls to be saved. I was convinced of that. But I'm not doing that now. There was one day we started out for New Brunswick in a plane that I'd never been in before. When I was checked out in that airplane, I wasn't checked out properly as far as gas gauges are concerned. Halfway to where we were going, over the woods, when the engines quit. It was only a matter of seconds after that the other one quit. And you know that an aircraft can't stay in the air without the engine going. I'm telling you this for a reason. I hope you'll bear with me. I hope somebody will get some good from this. We looked around and there was no place to go into but the woods. So we were making the turn around to get into wind, and there was a road going through, just a little narrow road, dirt road. So we were picking this out for the place to land. It was about a half a mile and then a sharp turn. There was a railway crossing that we had to get by because there'd be a windbag there. And it worked out perfectly. The wheels came into place just at the moment of touchdown. The man that was sitting beside me, he jumped out. He picked me up and carried me round. He said, "My, that was wonderful work." And then he said, "There was somebody upstairs watching." I said, "Yes, sir, there was." I won't go any further with that story, but it happened again that very same day. However, what I'm saying that for is, you see, there was times when God was trying to show me, "You're on the wrong route. You're going the wrong way. I have something more for you to do. And that's not it. I say again, I like my work. I love the planes. But I wasn't happy." Came to one night, July the 11th, working hard all day. I got to my room, got down on my knees. I said, "Lord, I know this can't continue. There has to be something happen. I don't know what it is, but I was asking God to speak to me again." Next morning, we started early again. It was the second load. But you know, when Jonah ran away, everything was set for him. The boat was there to take him away. The fare was there. Everything was congenial. But you know what happened, Jonah, when he ran away, he got into trouble. And I say again, when I threw in the sponge, everything was there. And we just went across to the airport. Got a job right away. I say again, I loved it. However, this 12th of July, 1977, we're making the first pass, turning towards the mountains. And all of a sudden, the engine quits. We're only 15 feet above the trees. And there's only one place to go. That's into the trees. No sooner had that aircraft struck the ground than there was a ball of fire. And then that black smoke rising into the heavens. I couldn't help but think, the smoke of their torment ascended up forever and ever. By the time I got out of it, get out onto the wing, could no longer breathe, and every muscle in the body stiffened up. I recognized the heat has taken the oxygen. So I allowed myself to fall on the wing and roll off onto the ground. Crawling away, standing looking at that aircraft burning, I couldn't believe it. But you know, it just struck me this way. I was asking God last night to speak again. and the goodness of God is done so. The men above that were directing the operation, they saw what was happening. They called the boys down below, and they were there in about 15, 20 minutes. I had to walk down 500 feet or so down through the rust thistles and everything else. I didn't know at that time, I didn't realize, I guess I was in shock. My clothes were nearly all gone. Got into the truck. They started driving furiously. I suppose it was a good 20 minutes afterwards I began to feel the pain. I can't describe it to you. As accumulated, it seemed to be getting worse and by the minute. Until finally I said to the boys, I says, I'm burnt. I didn't know that before. And one big man, he grabbed me and hugged me as it were, and he says, oh, you'll be all right. You're big and strong and rugged, Robert. He said, you'll soon have me at the hospital. We'll have you. And you have no idea what that does. Somebody pouring that confidence into your ear. And again, I stop and wonder, what will it be like? In the burnings of the lake of fire, there's nobody to comfort another. Anyway, we got to the hospital. Just as we were pulling up onto the ramp at the emergency, I said to the man sitting beside me, I said, tell me, what will hell be like? He didn't answer me that. It was 3 hours before they could give me anything, any morphine or anything. They had to find out what I'd been rolling around in. Then there was a bit of ease. Why I'm telling you that is simply, when I was in the hospital and got a little bit of ease, I began to think, yes, there is another road. There is something else that God wants. And He brought me to it. That's why I'm here tonight. When I stop and consider, what it is for a person to die in their sins and get down to that everlasting lake, I can't rest and stay at home. My daughter was half mad at me. She said, you should be home with mother, because she's going through problems. But how can I? So I said to her, you tell me why God has raised me. I was supposed to die that night, as far as the doctor was concerned. And again, a year and a half ago, they thought it was all up. But why am I here? And I look at men and women and boys and girls, especially those that we have come to know and love. What can I say? My friend, in this meeting tonight, I want to tell you there's a dreadful end for those who are not saved. David got the word. He called his mother. He says, I'll be over in a few minutes. They got an airplane. They came to meet me. I came to the hospital. And when David came in beside me, he just stood and he looked. I said, David, we've been through a lot together. He had been my co-pilot for years. I said, we've been through thunderstorms and turbulence, so it seemed as though the aircraft wouldn't stay in the air any longer. But I have been through something today. A little bit of what hell must be. And I hope you'll never know what it is to be in that terrible end. 3 weeks later, David got saved. As far as I was concerned, it was well worth it. And I wouldn't want to go through it again. But I wouldn't want to be without that experience. It softened me. I could be very judgmental before that. How about others? Pardon me, I can't be judgmental anymore. I can't be hard on someone else that's missed the turnpike. And I do hope and trust that any in our meeting tonight, those who are saved and not just in happy condition, that you'll get to see what God is wants you to have and do and go in for it. And for you who are not saved, what could I say? Come, O my soul, thy certain ruin trace. If thou should spurn thy Savior's proffered grace, infinite years in torment must thou spend, which never, never, never the end. Yes, thou must spend in torturing despair as many years as atoms in the air. When these are gone, as many to ensue as blades of grass or drops of morning dew. When all these doleful years are spent in pain and multiplied by myriads again, could I suppose that then thy wretched years are at an end? That would afford some ease. But I think of that word forever. It seems to be dancing on the very flames of the eternal lake. Forever, forever, forever. Let me say, there's likely many here tonight that I won't see again. Whatever you do, don't miss God's salvation. Don't let the devil cheat you anything any longer. He's been doing a good job of it, keeping you occupied with one thing after another, occupied with religion, and it'll let you down at the end. Occupied with education, and what's the good of it when you come to the end of the journey? Occupied with trying to get ahead in life, and that's all good in its place. But my friend, you have a soul no gravedigger's going to cover. It's either going to be in heaven or in hell for all eternity. May God help you to stop and consider this most important question. Get to Christ tonight.